Hey everybody, I'm Ben Morton and welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, episode number 7, I'm joined by Richard Stevens, who is the Managing Director of Plymouth City Bus, a £45 million turnover business employing 850 people, operating 350 buses and serving tens of thousands of people. I first met Richard around 5 years ago when I visited his head office in Plymouth, and I was immediately blown away by the incredible culture that he had built and the results that it was delivering. Whilst many of us have read articles about incredible cultures for organisations like Google, Innocent Smoothies or Zappos, few of us have experienced standout cultures for ourselves. Plymouth City Bus is by far the best example I've personally seen firsthand of the true power of vision, values and team charters in operation. This episode is packed full of wisdom and insights around service-based leadership, an unwavering commitment to always acting with unconditional positive regard for others, and how to create a team charter that actually makes a real world difference. I know you're going to absolutely love this episode, so without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Richard Stevens. Hello, Richard. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. It's great to be chatting with you. Most importantly, thank you for making time in your busy schedule. Having chatted to you off air just now, I know you've got an incredible amount on your plate right now. So really appreciate your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really honoured to be invited on.
So, Richard, the first question I always love to ask everybody that comes onto the show, really to give the listeners a little bit of background, is can you just tell us kind of what your current role is right now and a little bit about your journey that got you to where you are?
Yeah, so my current role, I'm Managing Director of Plymouth City Bus, which is a bus company based in, the name gives it away, Plymouth, but Devon in the southwest of England. I currently employ 850 people. It's a 45 million turnover business operating around 350 buses across Plymouth and Cornwall all the way to Land's End. In terms of how I got into this, well, actually, I started bus driving 31 years ago in Penzance. I left school with no qualifications. Unfortunately, didn't go to college, didn't go to university, and spent my early years sort of doing odd jobs in hotels and catering and that kind of thing. And at the age of 20, managed to save up enough money to pay for my bus license, entered the industry, and I've been here ever since. And I've pretty much driven or operated every bus service between Bristol and Land's End in the last 31 years.
Wow.
And I've got to be honest, I love it.
That's great. And of all those transitions, I guess you've gone through in your career, Richard, in terms of from a driver to maybe a supervisor, team leader, manager, which would you say was the most challenging sort of transition you've gone through as a leader or manager?
Oh, I think you transition every day as a leader, but I mean, making my way from sort of the driver's seat, it wasn't a nice, smooth career path that's led to where I am today. You know, I've been moved backwards, made redundant. I've moved sideways to actually, you know, do something different at different times. So I think in terms of the initial jump from shop floor, if you like, into a responsible role was quite tough. Not tough as in the challenge, but actually in the reaction of the people that I've been working with for quite a number of years in a peer group as a bus driver. However, I mean, you just stick in, and I think that my philosophy has always been to serve other people. And I think once they realised that actually all I really wanted to do was make their lives easier or better or more respected, people got behind me. And I think that, you know, if when I look at my journey through life, it's not really my success. It's the success of the people that I've worked with and promoted and invested in that's really helped me move to where I am now. I don't exactly find it hard, but I do think that you have to understand that the opportunity rarely shows itself with a big neon blue sign saying opportunity here.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you have to just get stuck in. But number one, you've got to be resilient. And I think if there's one of my character traits, some people would describe it as stubborn. I would describe it as resilient. I don't get put off achieving my goals particularly easily.
Yeah, there's so many things in there already, Richard, that I'd love to ask you that weren't on my planned list of questions. Just now, I heard you talk about, I'm not sure your exact words, is either serving others or being of service to others. That's fascinating to me because you might know and listeners will know, I started my career in the British Army, and kind of servant leadership was key to my initial understanding and training as a leader. I'd just love to know a little bit more about your view on that. Kind of how does sort of being of service manifest in your leadership style day to day? What does that look like?
I think what it looks like is a culture built on respect and unconditional positive regard towards other human beings. Whenever I give a new opportunity to somebody, I'm always at pains to explain to them that I'm not putting them in charge. This isn't about power. This is about an opportunity to help other people achieve our mutual goals. And that as long as you look at it through that lens, then the way that I work gives an awful lot of freedom within a framework. And the framework is we're delivering a common aim or a common goal. But people have a huge amount of empowerment on the back of serving others. Mm. And I think that, you know, the company success that we've got now is hugely driven by the fact that I'm not interested in job titles. I'm not interested in areas of responsibility. I'm interested in output. I'm interested in impact that we have through our efforts. And it really doesn't matter to me where you come from or who you are or what you do or what you say. It is literally the effort that you put into other people, whether that be our customers or our colleagues. The more energy people are prepared to put into helping others achieve what they need to do, the more freedom I will give them to develop their ideas and energy in ways that let them grow. And I think I discovered a long, long time ago that actually the more I chased personal success, the more it slipped through my grasp, like
right.
Far as so power.
Yeah.
Whereas actually put your energy into helping other people, it creates like this kinetic wave of success. And off you go. And also in that collective, you end up with more resilience because you've got more people to take the tough times across. If everybody's carrying another person, then you know when times are tough or things go wrong or mistakes get made, then you've got more people to coalesce around that and actually sort of make sure that you come through it in one piece. And that you learn, you know, there's no point in being in a blame culture. I believe in living life in a responsibility-focused culture where people acknowledge when things haven't gone as well as they could do and that there's an open and honest dialogue. And I think that, you know, if you're in a sort of service-based management style or responsibility-based style, what it allows you to do is to have a common language that is not accusationary around personality, but actually focuses on people's behavior at work. And, you know, you just get much more done.
Yeah, that's amazing. I heard you say just now, you mentioned unconditional positive regard, and then you went on just now to talk about kind of having this shared language. That phrase, unconditional positive regard, is something I remember hearing you talk a little bit about probably 2 years ago when we first met. But I must admit, it's not really something I've heard much since or come across much in my career. But I get a sense that that's been quite foundational to the success and everything you've achieved at Plymouth City Bus. Like, can you tell us a little bit more about that, Richard? What does that mean, and what does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
So unconditional positive regard, I mean, it was shared with me, and it's something that I really use to underpin the values in my company, and in actual fact, in my life. And what it basically says is, how many times have you heard people say, I treat people the way I like to be treated, or I treat them as I expect to be treated? And but what that basically gives people permission to do is to lower their behavior in the event that somebody else isn't behaving that well.
Right.
What unconditional positive regard says is, it doesn't really matter how other people behave. We will always maintain a positive attitude towards other people. Unconditional positive regard. And so if somebody starts shouting at you, that means that we don't have permission within our values to start shouting back at them. And if people are misbehaving, it doesn't allow us to then reduce our behavior to the same level. Because I believe that the standard that you set is the one that you're prepared to walk past. So if you walk past poor behavior and do nothing about it, and you don't challenge it, then that's the standard of behavior that you're going to get. And I watch so many people talk about cultural change but never quite grasp it. But you have to walk and talk your values all of the time. And so unconditional positive regard sets a benchmark of standard of behavior across our company that says, doesn't matter how somebody else behaves, we will not lower our standard of behavior. We will treat them with respect, and we will do our best in all circumstances. No get out of jail card.
So I'm sensing then it's not necessarily about positive thinking or making everything positive, because I guess some people might misinterpret it as if I've got an underperformer in my team, or I've got somebody with a bad attitude, or whose kind of behaviors don't live up to the standards we expect, kind of why should I kind of be positive with them? And it's not about ignoring things that are going wrong. It's really about choosing a useful, productive way to respond and deal with people. Is that right?
Yeah, effectively, what it means is that when you're addressing poor performance, it's funny, really. So many people attack, most of the time, people at work. You can train the transactional skills in for people and give them that capability. When you hear managers or leaders moaning about people, it's generally not about their capability or their transactional ability. It's about their behavior. And yet, in my experience, people find it really, really difficult to have an open and honest conversation about behavior.
Yeah.
They tend to try to manage misbehavior through focusing on performance management of the transactional element, and the conversations go totally unheard. So what unconditional positive regard says, I have unconditional positive regard for you, you have it for me. If we're in a situation of poor behavior, then we're going to have an open and honest conversation about behavior, and you do that in a positive way, and in our experience, people will respond to that, because actually generally people want to be liked and they want to be respected. But self-awareness isn't particularly a human trait.
Yes.
You know, most people put on a front in different ways that they present. They have a work face or they have a home life face. And particularly, I mean, I can give you an example. Our engineers, for example, you know, we're rough and tough, and, you know, it's all sort of, we man up and we do this and we do that. And the behavior in the garage wasn't that strong. And yet, you know, talk to them about unconditional positive regard. Talk to them about the impact of their behavior on other people. Get them to open up on the impact on them that other people's behavior has had. And of course, it turns out that we are all the same. Everybody responds one way or another to how they are treated by another human being. And, you know, moving that respect forward, unconditional positive regard, doesn't mean you dodge a bullet or you get by. Actually, what it means is that you have a framework to have an open and honest conversation about the full suite of somebody's performance, not just the transactional element, but also the behavioral element.
Yeah, that's great. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, which I've heard you mention and touch on a few times, is sort of vision, values, and culture. And this was one of the reasons I was so keen to get you on the show, Richard. So again, I remember when we first met a couple of years ago, I was really impressed and struck just by how strong your culture was and how well embedded it seemed across the entire organization. I wonder if you could just talk to us a little bit more about that. So what part for you as a leader does vision and values play in delivering ultimately what you've got to deliver for your customers and I guess shareholders?
So I think the way it comes down to integrity, you know, and it's how would you behave if there was nobody there to watch you? And you know, when you're managing a largely unsupervised workforce, so bus drivers in this example, they spend most of their working life on their own, making their own decisions. And you know, apart from induction or ongoing training, there are not many touch points for them to see what good looks like. And I think, you know, in my management, you know, in my career, I sadly have to say that I was poorly managed more than I was well managed. And you know, many times in my working life, it's felt like a battle of survival rather than one of promotion and opportunity. And so I'm trying to run the company that I always wanted to be a bus driver in. I'm trying to run the company I always wanted to be a passenger for, and I'm trying to run the company that somebody will invest in. And I think to be able to do that, you have to set your stall out, and you have to set it out really clearly. And you know, lots of companies have values and they live by them at different levels, but they get assessed and they get diluted by different people across the organization, and people benchmark them against their own personal standards. So to avoid that happening, you have, in my opinion, you have to give much more clarity as to what you mean on the interpretation of values, because
right.
Otherwise
everybody
sees them in a different way. So we developed our behavioral framework, our teamwork charter, and basically it's a two-sided document with responsibilities for the employees and responsibilities for the employer, the manager. And basically to get them adopted in the first instance, I went to the employees and I said, would you like to work in a world that looks like this? And they said, oh yes, we would. We want to be respected, we want to have opportunity, we want to be listened to, and a range of other criteria. And I said, well, that's okay, but each one of them has a corresponding ask on you that says you will behave well, you will leave cynicism behind and other things. And they said, oh, yeah, if we can live in this world, then we would happily work like this. So then I went to the managers and I said, look, would you like a workforce that will behave like this? And they're like, yeah, okay. Will you treat them in this way? Yes, we will. And that was the start of that process. But until we had that framework, that teamwork charter, there was no reference point to go back to poor behavior. Otherwise,
yeah,
it just became a slanging match between two people saying, you irritate me. Oh, no, I don't. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, no, I don't. Whereas if you can go and say, look, you know, I want to have a conversation around this aspect of your work. In terms of this, we're really, really happy of it. But if we're looking at the teamwork charter, I just want to explore some things that have happened in relation to, you know, number three, leaving cynicism behind. And so you've got a confrontational way of having that conversation. But what it does mean is that anybody joining the company is left behind, because many companies put values on the wall and then they don't do an awful lot with them for the rest of forever.
Yeah, whereas absolutely.
You want everybody who comes through your induction process, you want them to be able to join the journey as if they completed the whole journey. And that teamwork charter, those values, that energy, unconditional positive regard, these are all live messages that allows anyone who joins our organization to be up to speed with everybody else from the minute they join. They understand the expectation on them. They understand that we are a behavioral focused organization. And that behavior isn't just about internal. That's our behavior towards our customers, our stakeholders, our community. Everything about our organization is focused on good behavior, great behavior towards other people. You know, basically, I meet every bus driver and I ask them, what job have you come here to do with me? And they go, oh, Richard, you know, I'm going to be a bus driver, I'm going to be an engineer. And I say, no, you're not. What I want you to do for me is I want you to be a hero in the community. That's what I want you to do for me.
That's incredible.
Your best judgment to achieve that. And, you know, my favorite word is congruence. You know, do what you know to be right. And you can put this kind of empowerment into people. But what it does is it makes them feel better about themselves. It gives them a sense of value that's nothing about money. It's about a sense of purpose and belonging. And that's what the teamwork charter, the values, unconditional positive regard, all of these things are just tools that people can put in their tool chest that help them make the right decision when the moment is called upon for them to do it. Knowing that if the decision is wrong or goes wrong, they're still going to be well treated, that it's not going to result in them being marched out of the organization for making a mistake. Because if people don't make mistakes, they don't grow, they don't learn. You know, you can't live in a completely risk-free environment and grow great leaders of the future.
Yeah.
That's my view, anyway.
And Richard, can you give us an example of how sort of those tools around your charter and values sort of get used now on a day-to-day basis? So there's some amazing examples you've just shared. Like I've never heard of that dual approach when you first sort of brought it into the business, where you went to kind of your frontline people and said, would you like a boss or a manager who behave like this? If so, this is my ask of you. And then flipping that with the managers, I just think that's an absolute stroke of genius. And I heard you talk about going through it kind of when new people join the business. But I think I'm right in thinking your sort of value in that team charter is a good few years old now. So what do you do with it now, and how do you keep it live and make sure it's living and breathing in the organization now? Because I think you're right. So many companies try to create values and charters, and very quickly it just becomes something on the wall that people walk past and are completely oblivious to every day. So how do you keep it live? How do you use it right now, several years on?
I think it's about language. It's what I was saying about having a common language across your organization that people recognize and it becomes familiar. And I don't really want people sort of running their finger down the notice, although they are liberally displayed across the company. I don't want people sort of going, right, okay, what do I have to do here? Number three, oh yes, I'm going to put forward my ideas and, you know, remain positive or something like that. What the way that we keep it alive is the fact that it's the way we behave, and it's become our common language. And it's not okay not to help somebody else. It's not okay to be disrespectful to somebody else. It's not okay to walk past something that's got the potential to cause harm. And pretty much every conversation sits around this common language. Even our one-to-ones, which we call self-lenses, you know, our appraisal process, everybody gets, some time with their manager on a regular basis, but we don't call it an appraisal, we call it a self-lens. And it's a period of reflection, and it's a reflection against our values, and right. It's a reflection against the teamwork charter. And people are encouraged and rewarded to give examples of when they have done something that typifies or demonstrates in within those values. Our reward and recognition scheme, our star awards, the nominations have to link back to either one of our key values or something within the teamwork charter. So you keep it alive by making that the constant purpose, that strive for behavioral excellence.
Got it.
And it's when things go wrong, that's when these things are tested. Because these is all, you know, if you're having a bad day or you're not happy at work, then it's really easy to sort of say this is a load of rubbish and, you know, it doesn't mean a thing and it's wrong. Well, of course, that's when the whole premise of living by your values comes under pressure, because it's when things go wrong. That's when people's behaviour, you know, comes down to its lowest level. If you're stressed and the business is stressed, that's when poor behaviour squirts out.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the opportunity to name that or call it or call people on it and say, look, you know, I have to be honest with you. I know you're under pressure, but you know, don't, you know, you can't speak to me like that, or you know, I need to tell you how you've made me feel. But also, what it's done is it's promoted the opportunity to ask people if they need help, or for people to ask for help without fear of you can't do your job because you are asking me for help, or you're weak because you can't perform at 100% every day. And the truth of the matter is, most, in my experience, most unhappiness at work isn't driven by the work. It's either driven by the treatment at work, or it's something in their home life. But if you don't create a safe environment for people to talk, then people won't share, because weakness is seized upon. Our whole society just attacks weakness. And it's really sad, because we all want to help people who are in trouble. And you know, you only have to look at how people rally around good causes and raise money and things like that. But they don't actually translate those values into their treatment of people within the workplace.
And, yeah, and so, yeah.
You know, I think it becomes a virtuous cycle. You know, my whole thought process is about sort of just creating this kinetic energy that just carries the organization forward. And it's funny, really, because, you know, quite often people say, oh, send me your stuff. Send me your paperwork. Send me your stuff and all the rest of it. And I say to them, look, it's just paper. If you want to see what's different about how we do business, you're going to have to come here and feel it. You're going to have to walk into a room where people don't stop and stare at you or totally ignore you. There's an air of warmth and friendliness. And I'm hoping that was your experience when you came to visit us.
Yeah, it was 100% was the case.
Yeah, you know, there's a general... You know, people like doing business with us, and people like working with us because we're a really nice company to do business with. And that doesn't mean to say that we're not business focused, because actually, you can be sort of I'm trying to think of the right word, but you can be absolute resolute and set on your business intention, but still do it in accordance with your values. Your behavioral set. You can be ruthless in business, i.e. in the execution of your aims and objectives to develop, you know, to deliver your strategic plan. But that doesn't mean that you have to be ruthless with people. You can still be respectful, and you can still hold your integrity, even if there's nobody around to see it.
I think that's so, so powerful, what you've just said. And I think so often that can be misunderstood, and kind of being nice or having strong values, treating people well and fairly can sadly sometimes be seen as weakness, I think. But it's so so uplifting, so encouraging to hear you say that's your case, and kind of your business is living and breathing that and achieving brilliant results as a result of that. I mean, you, just before we hit record, you was talking about having recently got platinum investors in people award, which is the highest award you can get on that scheme. I mean, you mentioned a Queen's Award for enterprise in the UK, which are incredibly rare. So I think your leadership philosophy, kind of Plymouth City Bus, is absolute testament that, like, nice guys don't finish last, right?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there was a lot of misgiving around my peer group, or there always has been, for the way that I like to work and people like to work with me. But the results speak for themselves, you know, and I think that a motivated workforce that's built on respect, you unlock discretionary effort for free. You don't even have to pay for it exactly in pound notes. People work because they want to work, because they feel valued and they feel respected, and they go on and they achieve amazing things. And, you know, I see so many organizations sort of try and manage their performance or their business in something akin to sort of setting a fishing net, where, you know, they either set the disciplinary holes so small that they catch the fish they don't want, or they set them so large in their policies and procedures that actually they don't get any impact on it. And I've always believed that, you know, if I'm using the same analogy, that if you've got a problem, don't throw a net in and catch everything. Dive in and go spearfishing. In itself, you know, it's like removing a tumor. You only want to sort out the tumor. You don't want to kill the whole body, you know. So I think that the benefits of working in a positive, respectful way far outweigh any of the downsides. And you know, I'm not going to say to you that, you know, people don't sometimes get one over on you, or you don't get fooled or something like that. I'm not all misty-eyed about this. Not all human beings are nice. But actually, the ones that are not swimming with the flow, they stand out if you create an environment of positivity. There's no hiding place. And the irony, of course, is that it becomes self-policing, because people want to stay working in that environment. They want to hold on to what they've got.
Yeah.
And therefore, you get an uplift, you get a bounce of overall behavior, just because people want it to stay that way. They don't want people poisoning the well. So it just becomes self-fulfilling prophecy in the end, which of course means then I don't have to do very much.
Richard, there's about 50 questions buzzing around my head that I'd love to ask you based on what you've just shared. But I'm also very conscious of your time. So if it's okay, I'll move on. Just a couple of slightly more quick-fire questions I'd love to ask you. The first of which is, what do you now know about leadership that you wish you'd known 10 years ago?
Oh, you said quick fire. No, 10 years ago. I think 10 years ago, I used to think that the really awkward people, you know, if they weren't there, life would be perfect. And I think what I've discovered 10 years later is, even if one awkward person isn't there, a new one will pop up. So right. I don't spend a lot of time and energy now worrying about the odd individual who isn't on board. I put all my energy into the people who are on board, and then, you know, sort out the other individuals. So, you know, this doesn't sound too respectful, but, you know, every village needs an idiot. So I kind of feel that once I've identified mine, I can live with that. And 10 years ago, or at the outset of my career, I really felt that you had to win with everyone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Makes total sense. Great. And what's one of the most useful pieces of advice from a leadership perspective that you would give to somebody stepping into their first managing director role or maybe chief operating officer role?
If they're just stepping in, I would say, you know, take your time, take time to listen. The people who will talk to you first aren't necessarily the people you should be listening to. Get to know your organization from top to bottom in detail before you start to make a change. But give yourself time. I think that's the first thing. It's really tempting to get in and just sort of see the problems and start smashing at them. But a small action from you creates a large impact somewhere else. And be careful of thinking out loud, because people act on what you say, even if you want it to happen. And I think, you know, I have to be really careful, because I might just muse on something and then you come back, you know, a little bit of time later and you say, why are you doing that? Or why aren't you doing that? And say, oh, you said, or, you know, and it's, well, I was thinking about it, but people act. So I think, you know, just be self-aware that what you say leaves its mark. And so when you're thinking out loud, or if you are, make sure people understand that you are thinking and not instructing.
Great. Brilliant. And what are you reading, kind of learning about right now? Kind of what are you curious about at the moment?
I'm reading crime thrillers purely because I need a distraction from COVID at the moment, as there is no other topic around. What am I learning at the moment? I think that I'm excited. I'm excited about the new world that we're going to be inhabiting. And so, you know, I've learned a lot about myself over the last few weeks again. So, I'm really excited about what we can do next. How can we be better human beings at post-COVID? And whatever the landscape looks like, you know, there will be business, there will be enterprise. Human beings are hugely resilient. And we have an ability to regrow, rebuild. And I'm really excited to see, what I can do, what can my people do, what can my community do over the next few years? That's it. Yeah, it's a bit waffly, I'm sorry.
No, it's great, great. And the final question, I always like to ask guests on the show if you have any particular, peculiar, strange, really productive, effective ways of working or routines that you build into your day that you really think help you be successful and play at your best. Any top tips on productivity, performance, that sort of stuff?
Well, as you've witnessed with my answers, time management is perhaps not foremost in my mind, because I will give somebody my full attention. Time has a habit of getting away from me. So I have to have really, really strong processes for managing my time. I have a work reminder system. I believe that I should never leave any piece of work or activity or communication stationary, because if it sits in a pile in my in tray, I probably won't get round to it. So I either act on it, I either dispose of it if it's no longer relevant, or I put it into a work reminder system. And every day I open my work reminder system and it gives me a memory jog of what I plan to do when I put it in there. The other thing is diarize time to do the work. People are really good at diarizing meetings. They're not really good at diarizing time to do the work for the meeting or time to reflect. So I make sure that I diarize time to do the tasks that I'm faced with, not just attend the meetings, to pick up the tasks.
Yeah, kind of. I couldn't agree more with that. That's something I unapologetically bang on about so much to to anybody who'll listen, basically, but certainly to my clients. That's, yeah, couldn't agree more. Richard, thank you so much for coming on the show in what I know is a really busy time for you. Like, there was so much of value in there, so many golden nuggets. Almost regardless of what the listeners get from this episode, I've taken so much from our conversation. So, Simon, hugely grateful for you for coming on the show. Thank you once again.
I was going to say, you're welcome. And if one listener gets something out of it that helps them be successful, then, I'm really happy.
So there you have it, folks, my interview with Richard Stevens from Plymouth City Bus. I hope you got huge value from that episode, and I think that if you are looking to create any form of team charter, then the approach that Richard and his team took is a great place to start. If you did find that episode useful, then it would be amazing if you could share it out across your social media channels, and please do also subscribe on iTunes. Both of those things really help us spread the message, grow the audience, and enable us to keep bringing you more and more episodes of the show. That's it for this episode. Take care and lead on.